This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents One by One by Ruth Ware. Read by Imogen Church.
From the About Us page of the Snoop Company website. Hey, we're Snoop. Come meet us. Message us. Snoop on us. Whatever. We're pretty cool. Are you? Topher St. Clair Bridges. Who's the daddy? Well, if anyone's got a claim, it's Toph. Snoop co-founder, along with ex-girlfriend, model, artist, professional badass at Evolution, it all started here. If he's not at his desk, he's probably riding the moguls in Chamonix, losing his mind in Berlin's Berghain, or just hanging. Come find him on Snoop at Extifer, or hit him up via his PA, Inigo Ryder, the only dude who gets to tell Topher what to do. Listening to Oscar Mulero, Like a Wolf. Eva Vandenberg. From Amsterdam to Sydney, New York to London, Ava's career has taken her all over the world. But right now, home is Shoreditch, London, where she lives with her husband, financier Arnold Yankovic, and their daughter Radisson. In 2014, she co-founded Snoop with her then-life partner at Extifer, their idea born of a single desire, to maintain their connection across 5,000 kilometers of ocean. Topher and Ava have since uncoupled, but their connection remains. Snoop. Make your own connection with Ava on at Evolution or via her personal assistant, Annie Cresswell. Listening to Nico, Janitor of Lunacy. Rick Adeyemi, Head of Beans. Rick's the money man, the bean counter, the keeper of the keys. You get the picture. He's been keeping Snoop real since the very first days, and he's known Toph for even longer. What can we say? Snoop's a family affair. Rick lives with his wife Veronique in Highgate, London. You can Snoop him at Rickshaw. Listening to Willy Bobo, La Descarga del Bobo. Elliot Cross, Chief Nerd. Music may be Snoop's beating heart, but code is its DNA, and Elliot is the maestro of code. Before Snoop was a hot pink logo on your phone, it was just lines of Java on someone's screen, and that someone was Elliot. Best friends with Toph since before they could shave, he's cooler than any tech head has a right to be. Snoop him on at X. Listening to Kraftwerk, Autobahn. Miranda Kahn. Friends, czar. Miranda is into killer heels, sharp fashion, and really great coffee. Between savouring Guatemalan carbonic maceration and surfing net-a-porter, she snoops smile to the world. Want to write us up, hit us up, haul us over the coals, or just say hi? Miranda's the place to start. Snoop knows you can never have enough followers or enough friends. Make Miranda one of yours at Mirandalicious. Listening to Madonna, 4 minutes. Tiger Blue Esposito, Head of Cool. The epitome of chill, Tiger keeps her trademark zen state with the help of daily yoga, mindfulness, and of course, a steady stream of Snoop through her oversized headphones. When she's not pulling a Bhujapidasana or relaxing into an Anantasana, that's a side-reclining leg lift to the uninitiated, she's polishing Snoop's cogs to make sure we look our very best and getting the word out. Chill with her on at Blue Sky Thinking. Listening to Jai Jagdish Adgure Name. Carl Foster, lawman. There's no two ways about it. Carl keeps us on the straight and narrow, making sure that wherever we snoop, we're doing it on the right side of the law. A graduate of UCL, Carl did his pupillage at Temple Square Chambers. Since then, he's worked in a variety of international firms, mostly in the entertainment industry. He lives in Croydon. Snoop him on at Carl Foster 1972. Listening to The Rolling Stones. Sympathy for the Devil. taken from the BBC News website, Thursday, 16th of January. Four Britons dead in ski resort tragedy. The exclusive French ski resort of Saint-Antoine was rocked by news of a second tragedy this week, only days after an avalanche that killed six and left much of the region without power for days. Now, reports are emerging that in one remote ski chalet cut off by the avalanche, a house of horror situation was unfolding, leaving four Britons dead and two hospitalised. The alarm was only raised when survivors trekked more than 3 miles through the snow to radio for help, raising questions of why the French authorities did not work to re-establish power and mobile phone coverage more quickly following Sunday's avalanche. Local police chief Etienne Dupont refused to comment except to say that an investigation is in progress. But a spokesperson at the British Embassy in Paris said, "We can confirm that we have been informed of the deaths of four British citizens in the Savoie department of the French Alps and that the local police are treating these incidents as a linked murder inquiry at this stage. Our sympathies are with the friends and families of the victims." The families of the deceased have been informed. Eight survivors, also thought to be British, are said to be helping the police investigation. This year has been marked by unusually heavy snowfalls. Sunday's avalanche is the sixth since the beginning of the ski season and brings the total of fatalities in the region to 12. 5 days earlier. Liz. Snoop ID Anon 101. Listening to James Blunt, You're Beautiful. Snoopers, 0. Snoop Scribers, 0. I keep my earbuds shoved into my ears on the minibus from Geneva Airport. I ignore Topher's hopeful looks and Ava glancing over her shoulder at me. It helps somehow. It helps to shut out the voices in my head. Their voices, pulling me this way and that, pummeling me with their loyalties and their arguments to and fro. Instead, I let James Blunt drown them out, telling me I'm beautiful over and over again. The irony of the statement makes me want to laugh, but I don't. There's something comforting in the lie. It is 1:52 p.m. Outside the window, the sky is iron grey and the snowflakes swirl hypnotically past. It's strange. Snow is so white on the ground, but when it's falling, it looks grey against the sky. It might as well be ash. We are starting to climb now. The snow gets thicker as we gain height. No longer melting into rain when it hits the window, but sticking, sliding along the glass, the windscreen wipers swooshing it aside into rivulets of slush that run horizontally across the passenger window. I hope the bus has snow tyres. The driver changes gear. We are approaching yet another hairpin bend. As the bus swings around the narrow curve, the ground falls away, and I have a momentary feeling that we're going to fall. A lurch of vertigo that makes my stomach heave and my head spin. I shut my eyes, blocking them all out, losing myself in the music. And then the song stops. And I am alone, with only one voice left in my head, and I can't shut it out. It's my own. And it's whispering a question that I've been asking myself since the plane lifted off the runway at Gatwick. Why did I come? Why? But I know the answer. I came because I couldn't afford not to. Erin. Snoop ID not applicable. Listening to not applicable. Snoop Scribers not applicable. The snow is still falling. fat white flakes drifting lazily down to lie softly over the peaks and pistes and valleys of San Antoine. 3 metres have fallen in the last couple of weeks, and there's more forecast. A snowpocalypse, Danny called it. Snowmageddon. Lifts have been closed and then reopened and then closed again. Currently, almost every lift in the entire resort is closed, but the faithful little funicular that leads up to our tiny hamlet is still chugging away. It's glassed in, so even the heaviest dump doesn't affect it. The snow just lies like a blanket over the tunnel rather than clogging the rails. Which is good, because on the rare occasions it does shut, we're totally cut off. There's no road up to San Antoine 2000. Not in winter, anyway. Everything from the guests in the chalet right through to every scrap of food for breakfast, lunch and dinner has to come up in the funicular. Unless you've got the money for a helicopter transfer, which, believe me, is not unheard of in this place. But the helicopters won't fly in poor conditions. If a blizzard comes in, they stay safely down in the valley. It gives me a strange feeling if I think about it too much. A kind of claustrophobia that's at odds with the wide-open vistas from the chalet. It's not just the snow. It's 100 weight of unwelcome memories bearing down on me. If I stop for more than a minute or two, the images start to come unbidden, crowding into my mind, numb fingers scrabbling through hard-packed snow, the sheen of sunset on blue skin, the glint of frosted lashes. But fortunately, I've got no time to stop today. It's gone 1 o'clock and I'm still cleaning the second-to-last bedroom when I hear the shuddering sound of the gong from downstairs. It's Danny. He shouts my name and then something I can't make out. What? I call down and he shouts again, his voice clearer this time. He must have come out into the stairwell. I said grubs up, truffled parsnip soup. So get your lazy ass down here. Yes, chef, I shout back mockingly. I quickly dump the contents of the bathroom bin into my black sack, change the bin liner and then jog down the spiral stairs to the lobby where the delicious smell of Danny's soup greets me, along with the sound of Venus in furs emanating from the kitchen. Saturday is both the best day of the week and the worst. Best, because it's changeover day, there are no guests, and Danny and I have the chalet to ourselves. Free to laze in the pool, steam in the outdoor hot tub, and play the music we like at the volume we want. Worst, because it's changeover day, which means 9 double beds to change, 9 bathrooms to clean, 11, if you count the loo downstairs and the shower room by the pool, 18 ski lockers to sweep and hoover, not to mention the living room, the dining room, the den, the snug, and the outdoor smoking area where I have to pick up all the disgusting butts the smokers always strew around, in spite of the prominent bins and buckets. At least Danny takes care of the kitchen, though he has his own to-do list. Saturday night is always a big dinner. Got to put on a show for the new guests, don't you know? Now, we sit down together at the big dining room table and I read through the information Kate emailed this morning as I spoon Danny's soup into my mouth. It's sweet and earthy and there are tiny little crunchy bits scattered over the top. Shaved parsnip roasted in truffle oil, I think. This soup is really good, I say. I know my role here. Danny rolls his eyes in a, well, duh, gesture. If there is one thing about Danny, he's not modest, but he is a great cook.
Think they'll like it tonight.
He's fishing for more compliments, of course, but I can't blame him. Danny's an unashamed diva about his food, and like any artiste, he enjoys appreciation. I'm sure they will. It's gorgeous, really warming and, complex. I am striving to pin down the particular savoury quality that makes the soup so good. Danny likes compliments to be specific. Like autumn in a bowl. What else are you doing?
I've got amuse bouches.
Danny ticks the courses off on his fingers.
Then the truffled soup for starter. Then venison haunch for the carnies and mushroom ravioli for the veggies. Then creme brulee for dessert. And then the cheese.
Danny's creme brulee is his showstopper and it's to die for. I've literally seen guests come to blows over a spare portion. Sounds perfect, I say encouragingly.
As long as there aren't any fucking stealth vegans this time, he says morosely.
He's still reeling from last week when one of the guests turned out to be not just vegan, but gluten intolerant as well. I don't think he's forgiven Kate yet. Kate was really clear, I say, cajoling. One lactose intolerant, one gluten-free, three veggies. No vegans. That's it.
It won't be,
Danny says, still enjoying his martyrdom.
One of them will be a low-carbin or something, or a fruitarian, or a breatharian.
Well, if they're a breatharian, they won't be bothering you, will they? I say reasonably. They've got all the air they could want up here. I wave an arm at the huge window that dominates the south side of the room. It overlooks the peaks and ridges of the Alps, a panorama so breathtaking that even though I live here now, I still find myself stopping mid-stride on certain days, almost winded by its beauty. Today, the visibility is poor. The clouds are low and there's too much snow in the air. But on a good day, you can see almost to Lake Geneva. Behind us, to the northeast of the chalet, rises the Dame Blanche, the mountain that forms the highest peak of the Saint-Antoine Valley, overshadowing everything.
Read out the names,
Danny says, around a mouthful of soup, only he says it more like, read at the names. His accent is pure South London, though I know in reality he grew up in Portsmouth. I'm never quite sure how much is all part of the act. Danny's a performer, and the more I get to know him, the more I'm fascinated by the complicated mix of identities beneath the surface. The cheeky Cockney geezer he puts on for the guests is just one of them. On nights out in Saint-Antoine, I've seen him pivot from note-perfect Guy Ritchie to a gloriously flaming RuPaul, all in the space of 5 minutes. Not that I can talk. I'm putting on my own act. We all are, on some level, I suppose. That's one of the joys of coming here, to a place like this, where everyone is passing through. You get to have a fresh start.
I need to get it right this time, he says, breaking into my thoughts.
He puts a minuscule grind of fresh black pepper onto his soup and tastes it, then looks approving.
Can't afford another fucking Madeline. Kate will have my guts for garters.
Kate is the area rep and is in charge of coordinating all the bookings and logistics for all six of the company's chalets. She likes us to greet the clients by their names right from day one. It's what marks us out from the big chain operators, she says, the personal touch. Only it's harder than it sounds, week in, week out. Last week, Danny made friends with a woman called Madeline. Only when the feedback forms came in, it turned out there was no one called Madeline in the group.
or any woman with a name beginning with M. He still got no idea who he was talking to all week. I run my finger down the list Kate sent through last night. So, it's a corporate party this time. Tech company called Snoop. 9 people, all in separate rooms. Ava Vandenberg, co-founder. Topher St. Clair Bridges, co-founder. Rick Adeyemi, head of Beans. Elliot Cross, chief nerd. Danny snorts out his soup through his nose, but I carry on. Miranda Khan, Friends Czar, Inigo Ryder, Topher's boss, Annie Cresswell, Chief Ava Tamer, Tiger Blue Esposito, Head of Cool, Carl Foster, Lawman. By the time I'm finished, Danny is actually crying with laughter and his soup has gone down the wrong way.
Is that really what it says?
He manages between coughs. Head of Beans. Tiger, what the fuck else? I didn't think Kate had a sense of humour. Where's the real list? That is the real list, I say, trying not to laugh at the sight of Danny's screwed up face, shining with tears. Have a napkin.
What? Are you shitting me?
He gasps and then sits back, fanning himself.
Actually, I take that back. Snoop's that sort of place.
You've heard of them? I'm surprised. Danny isn't normally the sort of person with his finger on the button that way. We get all sorts here. Lots of private parties, the odd wedding or anniversary, but a surprising number of corporate retreats too. I guess the price tag is easier to swallow if your company is paying. There's a lot of law firms, hedge funds and Fortune 500 companies. This is the first time Danny's heard of one of the companies and I haven't. What do they do?
Snoop!
Now it's Danny's turn to look surprised.
Have you been living in a fucking cave,
Erin? No, I'm just... I've never heard of them. Are they a media company? I don't know why I chose that. Media seems like the kind of industry that would have a Tiger Blue Esposito. No, they're an app. Danny looks at me suspiciously.
Have you really not heard of them?
You know, Snoop, the music app. It lets you, well, snoop on people. That's kind of it. I have literally no idea what you're on about.
Snoop, Erin,
Danny says, more acidly this time. Like, if he keeps saying it, I'll smack my forehead and go, oh yeah, that's Snoop. He pulls out his phone and scrolls down the apps to one that looks like two eyes on a hot pink background. Or maybe two cogs, it's hard to see on the logo. He presses it and the screen goes bright pink, then black, blazoned with Snoop. Real people, real time, real loud, in fuchsia letters. This time the two O's of the name are the wheels of a cassette tape.
You, like, hook it up to your Spotify account or whatever,
Danny explains, scrolling through menus as he does, as if lists of random celebrities will make everything clear.
And it makes your listening public.
Why would anyone want to do that? I say blankly.
It's a quid pro quo, innit?
Danny says, sounding impatient.
The whole point is no one wants to listen to you, but if you join, you get to listen to other people. Voyeurism for your ears is what Snoop calls it.
So, I can see what, I don't know, Beyonce is listening to, if she were on there?
Yep, and Madonna and Jay-Z and Justin Bieber and whoever else. Slebs love it. It's the new Instagram. It's like
you can connect, yeah?
But without actually giving away too much information. I nod slowly. I can actually kind of see the attraction of that. So it's basically famous people's playlists?
Not playlists, Danny says. Because the whole point is that it's real time. You get what they're listening to right now.
What if they're asleep?
Then you don't get anything. They don't appear in the search bar if they're not online and listening. And if you're snooping on someone and they stop listening, their feed goes dead and you get the option to shunt along to someone else.
So, if you're snooping on someone and they pause a song to answer the phone, Danny nods.
Yeah, it just cuts off.
That's a really terrible idea. He laughs and shakes his head.
Nah, you're not getting it. The whole point is...
He stops, trying to formulate something unquantifiable into words.
The whole point is the connection. You're actually listening to the same thing at the same moment as they are, beat for beat. You know that wherever she's in the world, Lady Gaga is listening to the exact same thing you are. It's like...
Inspiration strikes and his face lights up.
It's like, you know when you're first going out with someone and you're sharing a set of headphones, one earpiece in their ear, one earpiece in yours?
I nod.
Well, it's like that. You and Lady Gaga sharing her earphones. It's really powerful. When you're lying there in bed and they switch off and you know that somewhere they're probably doing the exact same thing as you, rolling over, falling asleep. It's pretty intimate, you know? But it's not just celebrities. If you're in a long-distance relationship, say, you can snoop your bloke and listen to the same song at the same time. Assuming you know his Snoop ID, of course, I keep mine locked down.
Okay, I say slowly. So, like, your feed is public, but no one knows it's you?
Yeah, so I have, like, 2 followers because I've not bothered to hook up any of my contact list. Mind you, some of the most popular Snoopies are totally incognito.
There's this one guy in Iran, Hacked, he's called. He's in the top 10 Snoopies pretty much every month.
Well, I say in Iran, there's no actual way of knowing. That's just what it says on his Snoop biog. He could be from Florida.
An alert pings on his phone and he brings it up.
Ah, yeah, there, see? This is someone I'm subscribed to, Ms. Agronistic. She's this French-Canadian chick in Montreal. She listens to some really cool punk stuff. That alert was telling me she's come online and she's playing...
He scrolls down the notification.
The Slits, apparently. Not sure that's my cup of tea, but that's the thing. It might be. I just don't know.
Right. I'm not sure I'm any the wiser, really, but it's sort of making sense.
Anyway,
Danny says. He gets up and starts clearing our soup plates.
That's what I meant, these tech startups. You could actually imagine them calling their head of finance Chief Bean Counter or whatever the fuck he was called. They'd think it was edgy or something. Coffee?
I look at my watch. 2:17. I can't. I've got a couple of rooms still to do, then the pool.
I'll bring you one up.
I stand and stretch, working the kinks out of my neck and shoulders. It's physical work, cleaning. I never realised how much before I started this job. Heaving hoovers up and down stairs, scrubbing toilets and tiles, doing 9 rooms on the trot is a workout. I'm finishing the pool when Danny comes in with a cup of coffee. He's wearing his usual trunks, the smallest, tightest ones I've ever seen in real life. They are banana yellow, and when he turns round to put my coffee down on the lounger, you can see that he has "Bad Boy" written across his butt in scarlet letters. "Don't make any splashes," I warn him as he stands poised at the edge of the pool, his arms outstretched. "I'm not mopping again." He says nothing, just sticks out his tongue, and then does a perfect splash-free dive into the shallow end of the pool. It's not really deep enough for diving, but he skims the bottom and comes up safely at the far end. "Come on, the bloody place is clean enough. Get in." I waver. I haven't hoovered the dining room, but I don't know if anyone would be able to tell. I look at my watch. 3:15. The guests are supposed to arrive at 4 p.m. I'm cutting it fine. "Oh, all right then." It's our weekly ritual, a 10-minute dip after all the chores are done, like a way of reclaiming our territory, reminding ourselves who's actually in charge in this place. My bikini is on under my clothes, and I pull off my sweaty T-shirt and stained cleaning jeans and ready myself to dive. I'm just about to push off when I feel a hand grab my ankle and yank me forwards, and with a shriek, I pitch into the pool. I surface, spluttering, raking hair out of my eyes. There is water everywhere. "You fucking imbecile! I said no splashes." "Chill." Danny is laughing uproariously, the water like jewels on his dark skin. "I'll mop it, I swear." "I'll bloody kill you if you don't." "I'll do it. I said so, didn't I?" "I'll do it while you dry your hair." He points to his buzz-cut scalp, reminding me that he's got a head start on me in that department. I punch him on the shoulder, but I can't stay mad at him. And for the next few minutes, we swim and wrestle and fight like puppies, until at last we're both drenched and gasping for air and have to stop to catch our breath. Danny pulls himself out of the water, grinning and panting, and pads off to the changing room to get dressed and greet the guests. I should follow him. I know it. There is plenty still left to do. Jobs to complete, tasks to finish. But for a moment, just a moment, I let myself float, spread-eagled on the clear blue water. I touch my fingers to the scar that runs across my cheek, tracing the dented line where the skin is thin and still tender. And I gaze up at the grey sky through the glass roof above, watching as the snowflakes come spiralling down. The sky is the exact colour of Will's eyes. The clock is ticking down to the arrival of our guests, and I can hear Danny beginning to mop the changing rooms. I should get out, but I can't. I can't look away. I just lie there, my dark hair fanning out around me, floating, gazing up, remembering.
Liz, Snoop ID Anon 101, listening to Snooping Ed Sheeran, Snoopers 0. Snoopscribers 0.
We are quite high up in the mountains now. The minibus makes its way up through little alpine villages that would look like picture postcards, except the sky is a threatening slate colour, not blue. The slushy rain down in the valley has turned into huge white flakes, and the driver has the windscreen wipers on full, swishing them aside as fast as they fall. Beneath us, the wet black tarmac has turned into frozen grey ridges,
and the tyres are making a strange rattling sound as they pass over them. Either side of the road, huge, mud-spattered drifts have been thrown up by the snowplough. It feels like we're driving through a tunnel. It gives me a strange, hemmed-in feeling, and I look down at my phone, flicking through the apps to try to distract myself before coming back to Snoop. After I left the company, I deleted the app. I wanted everything about Snoop behind me, and I didn't like the idea of Topher, Ava and the others keeping tabs on me through the software. But a few weeks later, I found myself downloading it again. There is a reason it has just tipped 100 million users. It's addictive. But this time, my profile is locked down as tight as it will go. And there is a junk email address attached to the account so that even Elliot, who has access to all the behind-the-scenes information, can't know it's me. It's not that I'm paranoid. I don't imagine he sits there searching the user records for Liz Owens every few days. I'm just quite a private person. That's normal, isn't it? Topher says something over his shoulder to me. I pull my earbuds out. Sorry, what did you say?
I said, drink?
He holds out an open bottle of champagne. I shake my head. No, thanks.
Suit yourself.
He takes a swig directly from the bottle and I try not to shudder. He swallows, wipes his mouth, then says,
I hope the weather clears up. We won't get much skiing in at this rate.
Can't you ski in the snow then? I ask. He laughs like he thinks I'm an idiot.
Well, you can, but it's not much fun. It's like running in the rain. Have you never been skiing?
No. I realise I'm chewing the dead skin at the side of my nail and I make myself drop my hand. I have a sharp flash of my mother's worried voice. Liz, please don't do that. You know Daddy doesn't like it. I raise my own voice, shutting it out. I mean, not really. I did dry slope skiing once at school, but I don't think it's really the same.
You'll love it,
Topher says with that infuriating confidence. The truth is, of course, that he has no way of knowing whether I will love skiing or not. But somehow, when he makes these pronouncements, you believe him. When he says, your money will be completely safe, or it's an amazing investment, or you'll never get these terms again, you trust him. You sign that check. You make that deposit. You put everything into his hands. It is why he is who he is, I suppose. That million-dollar confidence. Ugh. I don't say anything in response, but he's not waiting for an answer. He gives me a big, flashing grin and takes another gulp of Krug, then turns back to the driver.
We must be almost there, is that right? Comment?
The driver says in French. Topher smiles with exaggerated patience and repeats himself more slowly this time.
Almost there.
Presque.
The driver says brusquely. Nearly. I translate under my breath and then wish I had not.
I didn't know you spoke French, Liz,
Ava says. She turns round to look at me. She is smiling. She says the words like she is handing out gold stars. There's a lot you don't know about me, Ava, I think. GCSE, I mutter instead. Not very good.
You are such a dark horse,
Ava says admiringly. I know she is trying to flatter me, but her words have a patronizing edge, considering English is her second language after Dutch, and she is fluent in German and Italian as well. Before I am expected to reply, the minibus comes to a halt, the tires squeaking in the snow. I look around. Instead of the chalet I was expecting, there is a dark opening into the snowy hill and a sign saying, Le funiculaire de Saint-Antoine. A ski lift? Already? I am not the only one who's puzzled. Carl, the thick-set lawyer, is looking alarmed too. The driver gets down from the front and starts heaving out cases.
Are we walking from here or what?
Carl says.
Didn't bloody pack my snowshoes. We're staying in Saint-Antoine 2000,
Topher's assistant says. His name, I discovered on the plane, is Inigo. He is American, blonde, and extremely good-looking. He is speaking to Carl, but also to the rest of us.
This is Saint-Antoine Le Lac, but there are a lot of little hamlets scattered around, some of them just a couple of chalets. The one we're staying in is at nearly 7,000 feet. 2,000 meters.
He says hurriedly, as Ava raises an eyebrow.
It's got no road access, so we have to travel the last part of the journey in this funicular railway.
He nods at the dark opening, and as my eyes adjust, I can see a turnstile inside and a bored-looking man in uniform playing with his phone in a little booth.
I've got your tickets,
Inigo adds, holding up a sheaf of paper. He hands them out as we climb down from the minibus onto the soft snow, and we stand holding them, looking up. I flex my fingers nervously inside my pockets, feeling rather than hearing the joints click. It is 4:07 p.m, but the clouds are so thick with snow that the entire sky is dark. We each take a case, with the driver bringing up the rear, and then there is an uncomfortable wait for the funicular. It is invisible somewhere far up the tunnel, though we can hear the thrum of the huge steel cable as it approaches.
How are you doing, Liz?
A voice says behind me, and I turn to see Rick Adeyemi, Snoop's financial controller. He has an empty bottle of champagne under one arm. Rick is one of the few people I recognise, apart from Ava, Topher and Elliot. He grins, huffing a white cloud into the air, and claps me firmly on one shoulder. It hurts. I try not to wince.
Long time no see.
I'm all right, I say. My voice sounds stiff, prim. I hate myself for it, but I can't help it. It always comes out that way when I'm nervous, and Rick has always made me nervous. It is partly his height. I don't relate well to men in general, particularly tall men who loom over me. But it's not just that. Rick is so polished. Much more than Topher, although they both come from the same world. Literally, he, Topher and Elliot met at boarding school. Apparently Elliot was always a genius, even then. It's a long way from Camp Spawn Secondary in Crawley, where I went to school. I know I am a creature from another planet to them. Weird, awkward, working class. I clench my fingers, making the joints crack. And Rick winces and then gives an awkward laugh.
Good old Liz,
he says.
Still doing that old clicking thing.
I don't reply. He shifts his weight from one foot to another, absently adjusting his silver Rolex as he does, staring up the track in the direction of the invisible carriage, lumbering towards us.
How are you doing, anyway?
He asks, and I want to roll my eyes. You just asked that, I think, but I say nothing. I am learning that it's okay just to do that sometimes. In fact, it's quite fun to watch people's reaction. Rick's eyes flick to me, waiting for my socially conditioned fine. And when it doesn't come, he shoves his free hand in his pocket, looking distinctly disconcerted. Good. Let him wait.
Erin, Snoop ID, Little Mai, listening to Snoop Scribers, 0.
Lit Lemmy, Danny says, looking over my shoulder as I type in my brand new username. He pronounces it like two words, Lit Lemmy. What the fuck does that mean?
Not Lit Lemmy. Little Mai. It's a character from the Moomins.
The Moo You What?
The Moomins. It's a series of children's...
Look, never mind, I say, seeing his baffled expression. What's yours?
I'm not telling you, he says, affronted. You might snoop on me.
Oh, so you're allowed to know mine, but I'm not allowed to know yours.
Too bloody right.
What are you going to listen to?
I click a profile at random. Never mind the Horlicks. It's someone the app suggested from my contact list, and although I don't know who it is for sure, I think it might be a girl I went to school with. Come and Get Your Love by Redbone fills the room. I've never heard of the band, but I know the song.
Someone's been watching Guardians of the Galaxy, Danny mutters with a touch of derision,
but his hips are twitching in time to the beat as he walks across the room to peer out into the snow. He's only there for a second before he swings back round, grabbing a bottle of champagne from the cooler on the coffee table and popping the cork with a sound like a gunshot.
They're here. I can see the funicular coming up.
I nod and shove my phone into my pocket. No time for chat now. This is Action Stations. 10 minutes later, I am standing in the open doorway of Chalet Personnage, tray of glasses in one hand, watching a little group staggering and sliding down the path from the funicular to the porch. None of them are wearing suitable shoes, and they've not mastered how to walk in snow, with short steps and your weight thrown forward, not back. One of them, a stunningly good-looking black guy, is carrying what looks like... Yes, it is. It's an empty bottle of Krug. Great. They're already drunk. A tall blonde man reaches me first, in his early 30s, handsome in a don't-I-know-it kind of way.
Hi, Topher, Snoop founder,
he says, grinning in a way that is clearly meant to charm the socks off me. His breath smells of alcohol, and his voice is every boarding school boy I've ever met. He looks faintly familiar in a way that I can't place. But maybe it's just the fact that if you were casting for the CEO of a hip internet startup, he's exactly what you'd choose. Good to meet you, I say. I'm Erin, your chalet host for the week. Champagne?
Well, since you insist.
He takes a glass of champagne off the tray and knocks it back in one. I make a mental note that next time I pre-pour drinks for this party, I'll use Prosecco. There is no way they'll be able to taste the difference, throwing them back like that.
Thanks.
He puts the empty glass back on the tray and stares around him.
Great location, by the way.
Thanks. We like it, I say. The others are coming up behind him now. A stunningly beautiful woman with caramel tan skin and white blonde hair is picking her way through the snow.
Ava Vandenberg,
Topher says as she comes level with us.
My partner in crime.
Hi, Ava, I say. We're delighted to welcome your group to Chalet Personnage.
Do you want to leave your bags here and head inside to warm up?
Thanks, that would be great, Ava says.
When she speaks, there's a tinge of something not quite English in her inflection. Behind her, one of the men slips in the snow and launches into a grumbling rant under his breath, and she says, quite carelessly over her shoulder, "Do shut the fuck up, Carl."
I blink, but Carl doesn't seem to notice anything out of the ordinary and simply rolls his eyes, picks himself up, and follows his colleagues into the warmth.
Inside the lobby, a fire is roaring in the big enameled wood burner. The guests shake the snow off their coats and rub their hands in front of the fire. I set down the tray of glasses within easy reach and unfurl the list of guests and room numbers. I glance around the room, mentally trying to match people to names. Ava and Topher I've got already. Carl Foster, the guy who slipped in the snow, is a stocky white man in his 40s with a buzz cut and a pugnacious expression, but he's cheerfully knocking back champagne in a way that suggests he's not brooding on the moment outside the door. Judging by her surname, Miranda Khan is probably the very elegant Asian woman over by the stairs. She's wearing 6-inch heels, and she's talking to the guy with the Krug, though he's swapped the empty bottle for a full glass along the way.
"Oh, Rick,"
I hear her say, a touch of flirtation in her voice.
"You would say that."
Rick Adeyemi. I put another mental tick on my list of names. Okay, so that's 5 of them. The 4 remaining guests are more of a puzzle. There's a slim woman in her mid-20s, with ombre tips to her short hair, holding, for some reason, a rolled-up yoga mat under her arm. There's an extremely good-looking boy in his early 20s, with a strong resemblance to a young Jude Law. He seems to be American from what I heard of his accent when he took a glass of champagne. Behind him is a girl with fluffy yellow hair that cannot possibly be her real shade. It's the colour of buttercups and the texture of dandelion fluff. She is wearing huge round spectacles and looking wonderingly around the lobby. And combined with her hair, the impression is of a particularly adorable baby chick. She must be either Annie or Tiger. She's about the furthest thing from a tiger I could possibly imagine, so I put her down as a probable Annie. The 9th and last guest is a tall, awkward-looking man staring out of the window with his hands in his pockets. His standoffishness compares strangely with the other guests, who are all chatting companionably with the easy back and forth that you only get from people who've worked or socialised together for a long time. No. Wait. There is one other guest who's standing alone. A woman in her late 20s, standing hunched in an inconspicuous corner by the fire, as if hoping no one will speak to her. She's wearing dark clothes and she blended into the shadows so well that I didn't notice her at first. She's almost... The word that comes to mind is cowering. And though it feels too strong, it's the only one that really fits. Her uneasiness is in sharp contrast to the rest of the group, who are already laughing and refilling their glasses in defiance of the advice about acclimatizing to altitude. But it's not just her body language that sets her apart. It's everything. She's the only one wearing clothes that look more H&M than D&G. And though she's not the only one wearing glasses, the others look like they're wearing props provided by a Hollywood studio. Hers look like NHS cast-offs. She reminds me of a bird, too, but not a fluffy little chick. There is nothing cute about her. This woman looks more like an owl. A hunted, panicked owl caught in the headlights of an oncoming car. I'm about to go over to her, offer her a glass of champagne, when I realise there are none left on the tray. Did I put out the wrong number? I look around again, counting. There are 10 people in the lobby, not 9.
Excuse me, I say in a low voice to Topher. Is one of your party staying elsewhere?
He looks uncomprehendingly at me.
I've only got 9 guests on the list, I explain.
You seem to be 10. It's not a problem, exactly. We can sleep up to 18, but there are only 9 rooms, so I'm just wondering...
I trail off.
Topher claps a hand to his forehead and turns to Ava.
Fuck!
His voice is very low, almost mouthing the words rather than saying them.
We forgot Liz.
What? She says, rather irritably, shaking her curtain of silky hair back. She's unwinding a long linen scarf from round her neck.
I didn't catch what you said.
We forgot Liz,
he says, more emphatically this time. Her jaw drops and she looks over her shoulder at the girl by the fireplace before mouthing a silent, echoed fuck at her business partner. Topher draws us both into a corner away from the other guests and beckons across the young Jude Laura-like. As he comes closer, the likeness fades, but the impression of startling good looks only intensifies. He has olive skin, sharp Slavic cheekbones, and the most extraordinary topaz blue eyes I've ever seen.
In a go,
Topher hisses as the boy approaches.
In a go, we forgot Liz.
Inigo looks at Topher blankly for a moment, and then the words sink in, and the colour drains out of his cheeks.
Oh, my God.
His accent is American, Californian, at a guess, though I'm not very good at placing Americans. He puts his hand over his mouth in horror.
Topher, I'm such a dick.
It's not your fault, Ava says acidly. Topher's the one who forgot her when he drew up the original list of names. But of all the people...
If you're so damn efficient,
Topher growls between gritted teeth,
maybe you should have got Annie to do some of the legwork instead of leaving Inigo to do all the heavy lifting.
It's fine, I break in hurriedly. This isn't going the way it was supposed to. The first day is supposed to be rest and relaxation, unwinding in the hot tub, drinking vin chaud, and appreciating Danny's cooking. Mundane reality isn't supposed to surface until later when the PowerPoint presentations come out. Honestly, we can cater for more. The only issue is how we rearrange the bedrooms. We've only got 9 guest rooms, which means 2 people will have to share.
Let me see the list, Topher says, frowning.
No, let me see the list, Ava snaps. You've already screwed this up once, Topher.
Fine,
Topher says, irritably, and Ava takes the piece of paper, running her finger down it. As she does, I notice there are what look like burn holes in her sweater. It looks like she's been doing welding in it, but something tells me it came off the peg like this, and probably with a hefty price tag.
Liz could share with Annie,
Inigo says helpfully, but Ava shakes her head.
No, absolutely not. Liz can't be the one to share, or it'll be obvious what happened.
What about Carl?
Topher mutters.
No one gives a fuck about him. He could share with someone.
Who? Ava says. Rick's never going to agree to share a room, is he? And as for Elliot...
She jerks her head at the awkward-looking guy standing with his back to the others.
Yes, okay,
Topher says hastily.
I can see that's not going to work.
Both their gazes travel thoughtfully to Inigo, who is staring worriedly down at the list. Feeling their eyes upon him, he looks up.
Did I miss something?
Yes, Ava says briskly. You're sharing with Carl. Now run along and break the news to him.
Inigo's face falls. I'll have to switch the rooms around, I say, mentally running through the list of which rooms can fit a second bed. Liz will have to go into Inigo's old room. That's the smallest. Is that okay? And then Miranda can have Carl's. And then Carl and Inigo can share Miranda's old room. That's one of the few that can take an extra bed.
Where is Miranda?
Topher says, looking around. I glance over at the stairs. Rick is now talking to the fluffy chick. Definitely Annie, I have deduced. And tall, elegant Miranda has disappeared. Ava sighs.
Damn, she's probably already gone up to her room. Well, she won't be impressed at being downgraded, but she'll have to put up with it. Let's go and find her before she unpacks.
I'll come with you, I say. Someone will have to move the cases. From somewhere, I feel a headache begin behind my eyes. Suddenly, this feels like the start of a very long week.
Liz, Snoop ID Anon 101, listening to Offline, Snoop Scribers 0.
Something happened on arrival. I don't know what, but I saw Ava, Topher and Inigo huddled in the corner of the lobby with the chalet girl, and I heard my name, I'm certain. They were talking about me, whispering about me. All I can think about is what they were saying and why they were glancing over their shoulders and scheming. Oh, God, I hate this.
No, that's not true. I don't hate all of this, this place, this incredible chalet, with its pool and its views and its sheepskin throws and velvet sofas. This place is a dream come true. I don't think I have ever set foot in anywhere so luxurious, at least not since leaving Snoop. If I was here alone, I would be perfectly happy. More than happy, in fact. I would be pinching myself. I hate them. When at last I'm alone in my room, I sink onto the hand-stitched quilt, lie back on the feather-stuffed pillows, and shut my eyes. I ought to be prowling around the room, taking in the glorious panoramic view of the mountains, testing out the spa settings on the bath, marvelling at my luck in being here. But I'm not. Instead, I am lying here with my eyes closed, replaying that awful, awkward moment downstairs over and over again. I should be used to it. Used to them forgetting about me, taking me for granted, ignoring me. I had a whole year of that at Snoop. A year of people going out for drinks after work and not inviting me. 12 months of, oh, Liz, would you reserve a table for four at Mirabelle? And knowing that that four didn't include me. One full year of invisibility. And I was fine with that, more than fine, actually. I was quite comfortable. Now, 3 years after I left, everything has changed. I am very, very visible. And somehow, Topher and Ava's scrutiny and their efforts to charm me are worse than being ignored. It is 5:28 p.m. French time. I have about 90 minutes before dinner, an hour and a half to wash and change and try to find something in my suitcase that won't make me look like a frump compared to Ava's new assistant and that tiger girl from marketing.
I don't even consider competing with Ava and the other woman with the high heels. What was her name? Miranda. They are not just out of my league. They're out of my pay grade. Ava was a catwalk model. And even before Snoop started to take off, her budget for shoes was higher than my whole salary. I have always known that we were operating on different levels. But it would be nice if I could go down to dinner looking like I belong in the same room with the others. I unzip my sagging wheelie case and rummage through the layers of clothes I stuffed in there early this morning. At last, halfway down, I find a dress that might do. I drag it over my head, and then I stand in front of the mirror, smoothing down the material, staring at myself. The dress is black and stretchy, and I bought it because I read some piece in Elle that said every woman needed a little black dress, and this was the cheapest one in the feature. But somehow, it doesn't